In this week's episode of Studio Inter, we'll be previewing the game against Lazio. We'll be discussing all things Inter with Italian football writer Nicky Bandini, this week's Moggi, Moratti and Frog, and much, much more. Everything here on Studio Inter, only on SempreInter.com. Benvenuti, bentornati to another edition of Studio Inter. I'm your host, Nima Tavallo-Ruzzari, wishing you welcome and begging your forgiveness for the involuntary hiatus last week due to some technical issues. I'm really sorry about that, but we're back now. We're back now every week at the very latest. We'll be doing two pods this week. Obviously, we're recording this on a Monday. We'll be recording the preview of the Sheriff game on Sunday and publishing that on Monday as the game is being played on Tuesday. But before we get into everything and before I confuse you too much, let me begin by introducing my panelists. Our SempreInter.com's own preview writer, Mr. Positivity himself, Mr. Mohamed Nassar. How are you?
I'm fantastic and excited to finally get things back into the pod again. So, yeah, looking forward to this episode.
Absolutely. Me too. And we're also joined by the SempreInter.com feature writer, Five Things We Learned from Inter, Mr. Jake Smalley.
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. I see that you've had a very nice international weekend. I saw you on Instagram looking very fetching, wearing a rather lovely scarf.
Yes, that is the reason for my hoarseness, my voice being a bit hoarse. I was at an event, if one wants to. The thing is, we in Sweden, all the restrictions were removed on the 29th of September. And so we basically had nothing big to go to like everyone else. And there was a huge, it was a really big, premiere of a musical where they turned a Swedish musician's songs into a musical. And it was amazing. It was a fantastic night. And that's why my voice is not 100% today. And I think, you know why, Jake, because I was screaming along in that video.
You certainly were.
To the songs. But we are also joined by a very good friend of the show. She's an Italian football sports writer and broadcaster. She focuses on European football and NFL. She contributes to The Guardian, the ESPN TalkSport, and she's the co-host of the new Serie A podcast called the Serie A Chronicles podcast. We're going to talk to her about all of that. Welcome back, Nicky Bandini.
How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Very good. Very good.
So good to have you back. And I mean, let's start. I mean, I want to hear your thoughts, because we haven't spoken in a while, and since we spoke, I mean, even if we were to speak every week, Nikki, a week in Inter years is I mean, time is a very, you know, is a relative concept in Inter. 1 week, there's more things happening in Inter in 1 week than most people's lives throughout their entire life. Since last we spoke, Inter won the Scudetto. Antonio Conte left. Hakimi and Lukaku were sold. Simone Inzaghi was brought in. Edin Dzeko, Joaquin Correa, Denzel Dumfries. I mean, there's so much going on. Oak Tree loans. I want to start there. When you look back at Inter winning the Scudetto and everything that happened since, how do you experience? Like, what are your thoughts? Like, if you try to collect them into are Inter going, you know, starting, was the Scudetto a punto d'arrivo or a punto di partenza, as the Italians say? Where are you on that?
That's an interesting way of putting it, actually. you know, it's an extraordinary story. It's where I am at it, where I am on it with, I can't even say a sentence now, sorry, my brain's mush, is where I am at with it, because the journalist, that's often how you sort of frame all these things, you know, it's an extraordinary story to have a team that ends a decade of Juventus dominance and then immediately sells not just an important player in Hakimi, but then follows up by selling, I think, the important player all of us thought in Lukaku, both in terms of what he was doing on the pitch, obviously, as you guys all know, who was Inter's leading scorer and assist provider last season, but also just what he represented, I think, at the time for the club in terms of being the sort of I mean, there's no question that he was the icon of the title-winning team. The fact that you had not one but two murals of him right outside San Siro in a season, basically, really sort of made it such an extraordinary moment. But I don't think you can call it a punta d'arrivo because the story is very much begun with that title. Or I suppose you could say the story begins with Conte arriving for the first season, the season four, but... And that story is ongoing. I don't know if it's a partenza either, because the partenza again is when Conte arrived. We're somewhere in the middle of the journey, and we don't know exactly where that journey is going, because I don't know yet. For this Inter team, I'm still very much seven games in, trying to understand Simone Inzaghi's Inter. I don't feel like I understand the team at all. There's parts of it that are still Antonio Conte's Inter, I think. There are parts of it that are markedly not Antonio Conte's Inter. But I think that's more complicated to unpick than it could be in some other managerial changes, because fundamentally, the outlook tactically, strategically, is two managers who are similar in their outlook. Not identical at all. But both Conte and Inzaghi are both managers who I suppose would in fact focus on partenza, on you know, fast break football, on playing with a back three certainly a lot of the time, and seeking to not focus so much on possession, much more on the speed of those. Again, I can't always find the right word for it in English football, because of course Conte was so determinedly against contropiede and counter-attacking, but certainly rapid breaks, which is why I like partenza. They're similar ideologically. They're not identical, you know, I'm stressing that, but they're similar. So working out where we are on the journey, even between the two of them, like how much of the football is retained Conte and how much of it is now Inzaghi's football, for me, it's complicated, I think.
I think that's very fair. Things usually are when it comes to Inter. I want to ask you one more question before handing over to Mo. The more I think about it, I'm basing this on what Simone Inzaghi said himself, that he wants Romelu Lukaku to have played more in the penalty box than previously. And that's where Romelu Lukaku is being used right now by Thomas Tuchel. That's where he's been used previously as well. And I think that's a waste of his talents. I think the only coach who has properly used Romelu Lukaku was Antonio Conte, and I think that's why Lukaku looked so devastating. He's the only one who seems to understand how to use him, and that's why I'm starting to think that maybe selling Lukaku was a blessing in disguise, tactically speaking, because I think that Romelu Lukaku, who's sitting camped in the opposition's penalty box with his back against the goal, although he's improved that aspect of his game, I still think that using him in the build-up phase is the proper thing to do, the way Inter did. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think maybe, I'm not suggesting that, you know, Edin Dzeko, you know, is better than Lukaku. No, absolutely not. I mean, simply tactically, given his age and given that who he is and what kind of player he is and the differences, as you mentioned, between Inzaghi and Conte, was it maybe a blessing in disguise to sell Romelu Lukaku?
I don't know about that. If Lukaku is being coached by Inzaghi, he's not camped out in the penalty box, is he? Ciro Immobile never was. Ciro Immobile is very much involved in the build-up play. It's probably one of the most underestimated aspects of Ciro Immobile. Everyone thinks he's just a goal scorer. But I think when you see, even with the national team, where he's had so much more disappointing contributions compared to what he does for Lazio, I think you see actually that Mancini values what he does in build-up play. So I don't think Lukaku would have been used by Inzaghi like he's by Tuchel. Also, because again, you've got an Inter team that is going to play for those fast breaks regardless. So I think that would be taking it too far to say it's a blessing in disguise. I understand your point though. I think that that Conte absolutely was the manager who, all through his last sort of, gosh, when did he first start trying to sign Lukaku? It's been about half a decade before he actually got hold of him at Inter. He was trying to sign him at Chelsea. And almost, you know, for years and years has been obsessed with this one player and has been convinced that he knew how to get the best from him. And he was right. You know, he really was the manager who knew how to get the best out of Lukaku. And I think Lukaku might come to regret leaving Inter, especially because I don't think he particularly was desperate to leave Inter. I think at first he sincerely wasn't that bothered and was quite keen to stay even. But whatever it was, whether it's the money or the conversations he had with people at Chelsea, something changed his mind somewhere on the line. But I do understand where you're coming from. And I do think we've got a different Inter up front as a result. We've certainly got an Inter that is not struggling to score goals without Lukaku. You're not going to get me to say it's a blessing in disguise. No, I think Lukaku with Inzaghi could have gone on very well.
Mm. Mo, did you have a question for Nikki? Then the floor is yours.
Yeah, hi, Nikki. Thanks for coming on. I wanted to ask a question related more to Nima's earlier question in light of what's going on with Newcastle United and the PIF. And of course, Inter's difficulties with the Suning Group and whatever's going on with China and potential repercussions with the Evergrande, potential bankruptcy, so on and so forth. Do you think in this modern day of football, a team is able to really rebuild itself in the image of its strong years pre Arab money coming in without the input of Arab money or oligarch money or money of that similar sort of magnitude and size? Is it possible to really build a project that can compete with the likes of the PSGs, the likes of United, Manchester City, so on and so forth today? Or are Inter just possibly a dog chasing its own tail at the moment and will continue to do so unless a really rich benefactor comes on and decides to put a lot of money behind the project? Where do you stand on this tricky subject?
Look, I am going to be absolutely explicit that I did not and would not support the Super League project, but I think this is a pretty vivid explanation of why the people who were at the forefront of that project, Andrea Agnelli and Perez and the other club owners who aren't from that category, were so keen on it. Because yes, this is a reality of the way football is going. It's absolutely been a building reality. It's not something that happened overnight. You can take it back and back, but you know, obviously when Abramovich showed up at Chelsea, that was a game-changing moment. But there's been plenty before that on this path towards football being defined by the extremely wealthy people who are able to take over football clubs. And you know, you can look at Italian football in its heyday in the 80s and 90s and say, well, wasn't it the same thing with Berlusconi and all the other figures who were just Moratti, even at Inter, who were tipping money into it and defining entire leagues based on their personal wealth. And there's some validity in that. I think there's also difference in it, obviously. And I think the Saudi investment in Newcastle is a whole separate topic that I think would require a whole separate podcast to address properly. But in terms of competitiveness of the transfer market, there is no competing with sovereign states that are willing to tip endless resources into a sporting endeavor. That there is no competition by natural market forces with billionaires, really. But that really raises a different question for me of what is, what is your sort of driving enjoyment of football? What is your interest in football? I think if you're brutally realistic about it, there's no question that in the last few years, we'd already reached a point where, because of TV money coming in, certain leagues have financial possibilities that others don't. And the Premier League is at the forefront of that. The Premier League has greater financial resources going right down the league now than other leagues. And even, and it's an Inter podcast, but the fact is that Juventus have been the club in Italy that in recent years has been pushing hardest to get up the rich list and even at the sort of top end of their possibilities are still very far from the top end of what the richest Premier League clubs are able to bring in. That's just the market reality. It doesn't mean it's impossible to have beautiful football. I think there's been some extraordinary football played in Serie A this season. It doesn't mean it's impossible for, in the context of certainly the structure that we have now for European football, it doesn't mean that it's impossible for, on any given season, a team from a country such as Italy to compete, especially at a time like right now when so much brilliant young Italian talent is coming through. If you've got a team that's won the Euros, that's formed, that is Italian, look at how many of those players are still playing in Serie A and are able to bring their influence to those teams, including, of course, Barella at Inter. And I think people are not wrong to sort of draw this conclusion that it's going to be impossible to compete in the market with your PSGs and your Manchester Cities and who knows, maybe Newcastle. I don't know yet how the PIF are going to spend their money. But if it's up to fans to decide whether or not that takes away their enjoyment of football altogether, because to me, the interest is never in the transfer story. It's never in that, oh, where's Neymar going? To me, the interest has always been on the pitch. Right? I know people don't all share my view on that.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting, like you said, I mean, this would require an entire different podcast because, I saw figures that viewership in the Champions League is down 35% from 2019. I think the only thing COVID did was kind of accentuate and speed up a process. I think we kind of reached the current paradigm and interest kind of reached a tipping point a few years ago. And I think COVID just kind of increased that, that for whatever reason, you can cut this in so many ways, but it would be very interesting to see how people, or if there's actually research being done in this and why the interest is going down. And it's not just in the Champions League and Premier League, but across the board, club football is losing interest. While I think national teams, from what I've read, is the interest is gaining on that, which is rather coincidental with FIFA's proposition of the World Cup every 2 years. So I do think we're at a crossroads. Where it will go, nobody knows. But it is absolutely an interesting topic for sure. Jake, did you have a question for Nikki?
I do. Modern football just depresses me, so I'm going to move away from that a little bit. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about Inter more specifically. What do you think of the summer recruitment that has sort of just been? I mean, I'm someone who's not massively too keen on Joaquin Correa. I think maybe Inter could have spent that money a bit more wisely. Do you agree with that? Or do you think he could be a good possible option for Inter? Is Edin Dzeko someone who's going to be really good for the first few months and sort of fizzle out? Do you think Inter have got enough with what they've bought to sort of see them through to defending their title?
I wasn't a huge fan of Inter's summer window, I think. Of course, you have to be realistic about the financial situation. There were some pretty ugly numbers on the most recent accounts that came out. So, of course, there needed to be huge sort of net income. But to say goodbye to Lukaku and say that, OK, the player who's coming to replace that is Edin Dzeko, is, with the best player in the world, a pretty significant step backwards. Edin Dzeko is a hugely talented footballer and has been brilliant, even in the start of the season, been brilliant in the past in his career. He's 35 years old, and expecting him to be at the level he's been in the first part of the season for the whole season is a big ask. I think also, perhaps even in this first part of the season, we've seen in the Champions League, he hasn't been able to have the same impact so far that Inter would have liked him to be able to have. So that's one part of it. Of course, Marotta has been saying in the last few days, look, we were trying to sign Vlahovic. The question is, how seriously were they trying to sign Vlahovic? I don't think he's lying, but football clubs make a lot of inquiries in the summer. It's a very sort of, a lot goes on in transfer windows, much more probably than people even realise, in terms of phone calls and messages and inquiries and all of that, and how serious that, how close that Vlahovic idea overcame something, I'm sceptical, because I think the gap between what Intel would have been prepared to offer and what Fiorentina would have accepted was quite substantial. But there's other players who've come in. I find the attacking recruitments overall just a bit odd, if I'm being honest. Dzeko really doesn't understand. Like, Dzeko makes some sense to me in terms of what he does on the pitch, in terms of the role he's played, in terms of very different role to Lukaku, but being someone who can be that offensive pivot, who can play with his back to goal. I think he's been actually really excellent so far, bringing other parts of that attack and the midfield into play. But the rest of it, I don't get. Çalhanoğlu is a number 10 in a formation that doesn't have a number 10. Mm. And Joaquin Correa is... I don't dislike him as a footballer. I think he's got things going for him. He's certainly got that ability to stretch the field in the sort of American parlance. He's got that that range and that ability to accelerate. But I think he's a bit of a 9.5. And, you know, I think that Lautaro, frankly, is a 9.5, something between a 9 and a 10. Mm. And if you've got Çalhanoğlu playing as who should be a 10, in my opinion, and you've got 2 9.5s, then you've got, I guess, a number 9 in it in Dzeko. How does that all fit together? It doesn't. I mean, unless Correa is just there to be Lautaro's alternative, fair enough. But the attack doesn't make sense to me. To sort of say on the transfer market, I didn't mention Dumfries is obviously a great signing. I think he looks really promising for what was paid, and I like seeing Di Marco back there as well. But the attack really doesn't make sense to me at all.
I couldn't agree with you more. I know that it sounds weird to some people when I say this, but I do think Inter have a striker problem. I don't mean a goal-scoring problem, because obviously, you know, the goals are coming in from other parts of the pitch. But I agree with that. I think Inter don't lack a natural goal scorer as an alternative to Edin Dzeko, because Lautaro Martinez is far from efficient in front of goal. Joaquin Correa has basically never reached double digits in his career in terms of goals scored. And then you have Alexis Sanchez, who we'll get to a little bit later in this podcast in another section, who seems to suffer from a big, bad case of lack of self-awareness, who's completely injured and way past his best. And then you've got Martin Satriano. I agree with you in that. And then I don't think it's strange at all that Inter are looking to bring in a striker in January. I was hoping they'd spent far less money and got Andrea Belotti in the summer, who... despite for all his limitations, he is a goal scorer and he's a number 9 who works hard. I mean, he's always been tipped to be, you know, Dzeko's replacement at Roma, because he was like this kind of poor man's Dzeko, they said. So to me, that would have made far more sense, given your financial reality, that you spent 33 million euros on a Joaquin Correa to be a backup. And again, I agree, I agree with you. Çalhanoğlu is a number 10. He's not a Metsala. And the sooner Simone Inzaghi understands that, the better off everyone is.
And he wanted to be above everyone else. That was the one signing he really wanted.
Which one?
Çalhanoğlu.
Yeah. No, I mean, when Eriksen got injured, I mean, obviously, when Christian Eriksen got injured, I understand that they had to do something. But the way that Simone Inzaghi has been speaking about Hakan Çalhanoğlu, I mean, he said it after the Genoa game. He said it completely, you know, repeated it. Çalhanoğlu is my Luis Alberto. He's my Metsala. No, he's not. He's really not. And the sooner I think Simone realizes that, the better off we are. We all are. Because I agree with you. I think Çalhanoğlu in the number 10 role behind a Lautaro or a Dzeko in this lineup would do far more damage than he's doing right now, where he just can't coexist with Marcelo Brozovic, similarly to how Christian Eriksen couldn't coexist to Marcelo Brozovic, but then Conte shifted the balance after September, after February, and then it all kind of clicked. But no, I agree with you. I think there are issues. It doesn't make sense to me either. It really doesn't. But before we let you go, I just want to, who do you think, I mean, give us your top six for the European places in the Serie A, your prediction time.
In order?
Yes, from 1 to 6. Come on. It's a bit of fun. We all do it.
Well, I think, you know what, I think I said Juventus last season were finished first. I don't think I believe that anymore. But I really don't know who's been ranked first. I honestly don't. So for the sake of I can't say what I think right now because I think I'm on the wrong podcast. Honestly, if I was going to stick my neck out for a team right now, it'd be Milan. I'm sorry to say that, but that is what I want to stick my neck out for. I think Milan first, Inter second, Napoli third. Ooh. See, now I've made it interesting, haven't I? Because I've only got one of one spot for Juventus or
Atalanta,
I don't think Atalanta are going to make it in this season. I've been saying that for a little while. I don't think they're going to be far off. I think that they've been punching above their weight for so long, and this is just such a competitive season for that top four that I think this might be the year when it comes unstuck. It's Juventus have to be in that top four, but I would not be at all shocked, frankly, if any of those, including Milan, who I've put first, slip out for Roma. I think that's a very real possibility, and certainly it's a possibility as well that one of them slips out for Atlanta. So very, very tough. But I will go with Milan, Inter, Napoli, Juventus, and then Roma, Atalanta. And I guess that's it would be just fine there.
What about Roma? So you have them, you don't have them there? Sorry? You woke up.
Roma 5th.
Oh, okay.
I'll say it again. So I have Milan first, Inter second, Napoli third, Juventus fourth, Roma 5th, Atalanta 6th, and I guess that leaves Lazio in 7th.
I agree with you. It's so anyone could win it. Like, it's one of those years where it literally is anyone could win it. Who do you think?
Yeah, I'm still unbeaten and have conceded 3 goals. So not even unbeaten, without a draw. So absolutely very. I think they're going to leave this season, and I don't think Juventus are out of the league conversation at all, just because they're 10 points back. It's a long season. It's likely it's what they could win it as well.
I couldn't agree more. What about Coppa Italia? Who do you think is going to win the Coppa Italia and Supercoppa, whenever that's played?
The Coppa Italia, who knows? Anyone? Let's say Napoli win it, because I've given the league to Milan.
And the Supercoppa between Inter and Juve in December?
I think Juventus will win it. But I shouldn't say that.
You should. No, you got to be honest. You got to be honest. It's okay.
Right. It'll be a big moment for Inzaghi even. I mean, Inzaghi's won some cups as well in his time. But I think Allegri, after I really doubted Juventus at the start of the season, he reminded us a little bit with that went over Chelsea, that in big moments he often comes up with a plan. And I think the Supercoppa, certainly the way that I've planned out the season for everyone, that would be a big moment for Juventus, because I haven't got the money or anything else.
Agreed. I have Victor Osimhen as my capocannoniere, despite that he'll probably be gone for a bit for the African Cup of Nations. Who do you think will be the capocannoniere, Nikki?
The main reason I think Napoli might not win the league, actually, if I'm being honest, is it's not just Osimhen who goes, but also Koulibaly and Anguissa, who started so well there as well. Capocannoniere. In the end, it's probably Immobile again, but who knows? I'll go with Immobile until someone proves different.
Thank you so much for coming on. And before we let you go, if you got something coming up, then please plug it. And also tell everyone about your new Serie A podcast project together with another good friend of the show, Mina Arzuki.
Yes, Mina and I have a new Serie A podcast at Serie A Chronicles, and that's our new podcast. We've done, I think, 4 weeks worth of episodes now. I guess we're doing a couple of episodes a week. So we're doing a mailbag episode as well. It's a lot of fun. You guys know Mina. She's just too much fun to make a podcast with. We're really enjoying it, but do check it out. It's every week we come out. We record on Monday, generally hits podcast feeds on Tuesdays for our weekly what's going on around Italian football chat, and then on Fridays the end of the week we have a mailbag Q&A, so 2 episodes a week, but hope you check that.
I can really recommend it. I've listened to it and it's really good. So thank you so much for coming on, Nikki.
Anytime.
Take care. Say hi to Mina. Right. Let's move on to the Lazio game, which we will be Inter will play on Saturday, this Saturday on, if I'm not mistaken, it's a it's not an afternoon game, but it's an evening game, early evening game, yeah, at 5 p.m. UK, 6 p.m. Italian time. It's away at the Stadio Olimpico. It's Simone Inzaghi's return to the Stadio Olimpico to play his Lazio, and it's an Inter who, face, it's two teams that are that have problems with terms of personnel. Inter's South American players, Vidal, Sanchez, Correa, Lautaro, etc. They, you know, Inter, they'll be coming pretty close to kickoff. Edin Dzeko's played for Bosnia, Çalhanoğlu's played for Turkey, Skriniar, Brozovic, Perisic, Bastoni, Barella, etc. So, and Ciro Immobile is injured. They have Acerbi suspended, Lazio. So it is going to be quite the interesting game. I don't know how to approach this because of this particular circumstances going into it. So I'm going to start with you, Mo. What kind of game are you expecting, and what prediction do you give?
I predict exactly what you predicted. A very difficult game to predict. I have no idea. I really have no idea. There are so many different. We've said it many times on the pod before. Predicting games after the international break is Russian roulette, and one where Inzaghi, like, there's all this other psychological and emotional baggage layered on top of that, makes it so much more difficult. I don't know how Inzaghi is going to approach the game. I mean, you know, for the longest time, we've known that Inter to Lazio, were a bogey team, and then subsequently, you know, with under Spalletti, the tide has been sort of reversed, and with Conte, then thereafter, the Olimpico no longer, you know, seems that difficult of a stadium for Inter to travel to. But again, with Inzaghi at the helm, is this going to be a psychologically difficult game for him to manage? We still don't know. We still don't know what sort of manager Inzaghi is. Is he able to handle these high-pressure situations well? Is he able to put his emotions aside? What is Sarri going to do? Lazio is a team that's under pressure as well. Sarri's, the results this season so far, after a pretty bright start, have not been very good. So they're not going to be playing without a lot of pressure on their shoulders either. So I think it's an extremely difficult game. I think ultimately, I really hope that Inzaghi is not too pragmatic as he was against Real Madrid in the second half, and in the sense that I think Lazio are there for the kill, and I think Inter can most certainly come back to Milan with the 3 points. However, one might find that should the game still be at a stalemate at minute 55. Just after the start of the second half, a couple of defensive changes, and you know, maybe both managers decide to set for a goal. Although I hardly believe that Sarri will ever play for a draw. So I don't know. I think it's a very difficult game, or it could potentially be a very difficult game. But I think just on the balance of form and on the balance of the quality of the different teams, I think Inter should be able to win this, but let me put myself down for a nil-nil draw, a very difficult, cagey nil-nil draw where tempers might flare and might get ugly.
That's interesting. You say cagey because it's Maurizio Sarri, and I don't think he knows how to play cagey. But I actually think it's going to end in a draw, but I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair with a lot of goals. I think Inter, you know, because of the balance that he's spoken about, but has Inzaghi's spoken about, but he's failed to implement, I think that Inter will struggle going into this game. defensively, that is. And I also think that without Acerbi and given how open Lazio look, they also will concede goals. So I'm thinking a 2-2 or even 3-3 spectacular draw, something like that. What about you, Jake? Where are you on the scale?
I'm with you on this one. I can see it being a high-scoring draw. I think if anybody's going to win it, I think it's probably going to be Inter. I think they've shown to be a lot more convincing so far than Lazio. I think Lazio are still sort of learning how they're going to go about things under Sarri. They've got Acerbi missing. He's suspended too. So that's not ideal. I think Inter will be able to score in that game. It's just whether they can keep it out. I think one thing worth sort of thinking about a little bit as well is, you know, the season's not really got going for me, Serie A, so far this season. These international breaks, you know, when you think back to the summer, you've got a lot of new players coming in, the whole talk of Suning and all this. I think you underestimate just how sort of difficult it's been for Inter to start under a new manager. A bit of added pressure as Scudetto holders. You're talking about trying to compete in Europe too. I think it's been really hard, and this is a tough game. I think it's possibly in some ways a really good time to play Lazio. I think given they might have a couple missing and they're still sort of trying to find their feet. They were beaten 3-0 convincingly at a pretty rubbish Bologna team as well just before the break. So I think you've got to take things with a bit of sort of foresight when you talk about games after the international break as well. I think, you know, you've got a lot of players, like you've just mentioned, traveling from all over the world during this spell. A lot of them arriving so close to the game, and you think, right, come on, let's go win this game. But it's not as simple as that. So I think Inter are a better side. I think if anyone's going to win it, it will be Inter. But I'm just going to hedge it a draw simply for that reason. I think the fact that they can't quite hit a stride Inter, and that's not going to be helped at all by all these players returning from internationals.
That's a good point. I agree. What do you think in terms of final results if you were to predict one? I'm gonna go big. I'm gonna say 3-3. Mo's going with 0-0. Where are you, Jake?
I'm gonna go 2-2. I'm gonna stick with 2-2. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got three draws then. Fair enough. Let's move on to the part of the show where we pay tribute, rip the piss out of, and criticize something or someone heavily in the world of football, starting with the positivity. This week's Moratti, which will be presented by Mr. Positivity, Mr. Mohamed Nasser.
He works a lot, he's intelligent, and he surprises people sometimes with his ideas. Not easy to find one person of this qualities.
So I really think I'm going to start tallying the various Morattis I hand out every week to see if there's a standout leader to come the end of the season. It's got to be Barella again with that goal he scored against, who was it? It was against Belgium in the Nations League, third and fourth place, what's it called, match. That goal was fantastic. Barella, you know, despite not starting the game, really, you know, clearly made his mark on the match. And we can't, you know, keep saying it often enough. The boy, the young man is world class, and he's definitely shaping up to be one of the best midfielders in the world in any role in the midfield. And listening to Marotta's words during the break with that long interview that we had about the renewal coming soon and wanting to compensate the player and make sure that he's satisfied and tied in for the long term is really music to my ears. So, I say this again and again, this project would be nowhere without Marotta. The only reason why we look at Inter with optimism is the presence of Marotta at the helm and the fact that we have players like Barella and like Lautaro and so on and so forth is, you know, really a real blessing. Considering where the club's potential finances could have taken us or any alternate scenarios. So seeing Barella perform consistently for Inter and for the Azzurri is a real treat.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. Let's move on to something much more comical, this week's Frog, which will be presented by Mr. Jake Smalley.
È clamoroso! Autogol di Ranocchia!
Okay, well, I wanted to go with a little bit comical this week. Maybe it's perhaps a bit personal to me as an English football fan, but what I really enjoyed this week, obviously, the big news coming out of English football is all about Newcastle being taken over. And there's been a whole big discussion about whether it's ethically right for my sort of two pence worth. It's not massively ethically right. But one thing that I have really sort of missed about football the last 18 months or so in my country is seeing the calibre of English football fans and all the pictures that would be plastered around social media of these 17, 18 year old lads, socks pulled up, cans of Stella Artois, celebrating Newcastle being taken over. That's what made me laugh this week. And, you know, as much as we can make things quite serious and be quite sinister about them, let's just, it's a message to me to try and enjoy football for the simplicity of what it is. So that's what I'm going to go with for this week. The idea of the common British football fan, because they just make me laugh.
Yeah, it did look a bit bizarre and it was a bit froggy. I couldn't agree more. Right, let's move on to something much more negative. This week's Modgy, which I'll be presenting myself. So there's a couple of things we can choose. As Jake alluded to, the PIF takeover of Newcastle. I'm not one of those people who throws hissy fits over people taking over over Saudi Arabia, taking the Saudi state taking over Newcastle, because I think it's quite obvious. If you zoom out, you see, you know, as Nicky Bandini said, Silvio Berlusconi and Massimo Moratti, you know, they also pumped money in the, you know, state. You know, this has been a long time coming. This has just been a slow, you know, shift in degree throughout the years. This is modern football. This has been a long time coming. And if you look at the previous people who have invested in the Premier League and previous states, as well as in PSG, it doesn't come as a surprise. It was just a matter of time before the Saudi state came in. So I'm not bothered about that at all. But what I do not like is the lying, is the dishonesty surrounding it. And who I'm referring to is the Premier League. Their statement that they released was the most ludicrously absurd and dishonest statement I think I've read from a league in a very, very long time. When they announced the deal, the way they announced it was they released a statement which was profoundly ludicrous. And this is the part of the statement that is ridiculous. It says the legal disputes concerned which entities would own and or have the ability to control the club following the takeover. All parties have agreed the settlement is necessary to end the long uncertainty for fans over the club's ownership. The Premier League has now received legally binding assurances that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia will not control Newcastle United Football Club. End quote. That is ridiculous, because the PIF is a sovereign investment fund. The definition of one is that it's owned by a state. If you were to look into whatever financial institution you on that works with these things, you will see that they all consider the Saudi fund as the PIF as a Saudi state fund. That is what it is. It's not an opinion, it's a fact. Okay. And this notion that PIF, who own now 80% of Newcastle, that they don't control Saudi, that they don't control the club, that Saudi Arabia, the Saudi Arabian state, doesn't control the club, is positively ludicrous. That's just a lie. If anything, their homepage is .gov.sa. I mean, it's just profoundly absurd to suggest that it's not connected to the Saudi state. Of course, it's connected to the Saudi state. And again, as I said, I'm not one of those people who throws hissy fits over this. I mean, the only, you know, this has been a long time coming. The Premier League's lies is this week's Modgy. This notion that you've received a legally binding assurances, that means nothing. All that just suggests that you're just washing your hands, because It's how on earth can you have received legally binding assurances that the Saudi state doesn't control Newcastle United when the Saudi state fund, state-owned sovereign wealth fund, controls 80% of Newcastle United? It's ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. And that is why I think the Premier League is this week's moji for their blatant lies. It's absolutely ridiculous. Just be honest. We all know what this is about. It's about money and all the virtue signaling about, inclusion is exactly that on their part and on their part. And that's fine. You know, if you're into that, again, I have no moral hiccups over that. My only issue is stop lying and stop lying in such a blatant way. It insults our intelligence as people. Right, that's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Nikki Bandini for coming on. I'd like to thank Mo for coming on. He had to rush off. I'd like to thank you, Jake.
Yeah, thank you. It's always a good opportunity to have a chat about Inter and things like that. I mean, we can talk about that situation for a long time, can't we? But let's push that aside and let's focus on Inter. Think about the weekend and hopefully we can come out of this international break, hit the straps and get a good set of league fixtures behind them and start to see some real progress towards this Scudetto defence.
Couldn't agree more. Until next week, please make sure to hit like, subscribe, give us 5 stars and all that good stuff on the various platforms where you listen to us. And listen. Hope you all stay safe. Listen to your health authorities. Wishing you also 3 points and sempre e solo Forza Inter.